I'm Marianne Kobusek-McGee, Executive Editor at Information Security Media Group. Today I'm speaking with Dr. Eric Lederman, an internal medicine physician and CEO of consulting firm Cyber Solutions MD, LLC. Until recently, Eric was longtime Director of Medical Informatics at Kaiser Permanente. We're going to be speaking about the apparently endless ransomware attacks hitting the healthcare sector and what organizations should be doing to be better prepared to deal with these disruptions to clinical and other critical processes. So, Eric, as I said, at the onset here, healthcare sector entities, including hospitals, clinics, and doctors' offices, are constantly being hit with ransomware attacks. Some seem better able to rebound than others. But in cases where clinical staff have to resort to manual and paper processes for any length of time, that's often a problem. What are you seeing among healthcare sector entities faced with these situations in terms of their level of preparedness to deal with them?
Well, Marianne, this is an enormous and growing problem of healthcare institutions in particular being taken back to, I guess probably the best way to say it is taken pretty much back to the 1950s, except for cell phones. They have those, right? So the cell phones are not taken offline, but everything else is. And dealing with pen and paper and all the technology that everybody just assumes will be there, being taken offline and being unprepared for the chaos, unprepared for how to manage the day after, the week after, the month after. And this is, at this point, both unnecessary and foolish because, according to data from the Ponemon Institute and others, probably close to majority of healthcare institutions in this country have been hit by major cyber attacks, including ransomware attacks. And it's just a matter of time before it's going to affect any particular healthcare institution. Some of them have been hit multiple times, unfortunately.
So, Eric, what about ransomware attacks and other sorts of disruptive attacks on third-party suppliers and critical vendors that disrupt the clinical and business operations of healthcare providers? Are these healthcare entities as equally unprepared to deal with those incidents? Is it worse? What should they be doing?
Well, you're referring to what is known as a supply chain attack. So these are attacks on upstream companies in a supply chain, in this case for healthcare. They're probably the largest and best known recent one of these is the ransomware attack against Change Healthcare, which is owned by Optum, which is a division of UnitedHealthcare. And it turns out, now we all know this. I don't know how many knew before, but it turns out is almost a monopoly in many critical aspects of healthcare delivery, all the way from benefits adjudication to claims payment to pharmacy benefits. Those impacts across the United States were so devastating. I don't think anybody was really prepared for that. And I'm not quite sure how anybody could be prepared for that short of, the government getting involved and trying to break up that monopoly. I don't know that I have solutions on offer for that, but there's been a more recent supply chain attack, which ironically came from a protector. That was, of course, from CrowdStrike, and that was not a cyber attack. That was really more like an own goal foot shooting incident where they pushed out a definition file that was highly problematic. I've heard it contain nothing but zeros. I mean, and but it, since it operates like all antivirus software does at the kernel level, it resulted in something, according to Microsoft, 8.5 million computers and servers across the country going to a blue screen of death, including many, many in healthcare and, of course, aviation and other industries. These are or should be considered black swan events, except they keep happening with some frequency. I don't know that I have solutions on offer for these kinds of supply chain attacks, except for perhaps to have resilience in suppliers. But maybe we could talk a little bit more about how healthcare organizations can ready themselves for the possibility, maybe even the probability of attack on themselves directly.
And in the cases where these institutions, these hospital systems, doctor offices, clinics, you know, you name it, are faced with a ransomware attack, and then all of a sudden, you know, everything shuts down, and, you know, clinical staff and other people there who are, you know, critical to the operations of that institution are now suddenly left without any of the IT tools that they rely on, the electronic health records, you know, all the other things that are just driven by these technology tools that they're so used to. And now they have to resort to paper and manual processes. How can organizations get their staffs prepared for something like that?
A very key and critical question for almost every healthcare organization, it seems. I know a very few organizations which have really done the necessary work that I'm aware of to prepare themselves for the day after a ransomware attack or the similar major cyber attack. But really, you know, from my perspective, I've spent the last several years helping lead this effort at Kaiser Permanente. And so I have, and I've you know, had a lot of engagement with colleagues around the country on this. And so I have what is sort of akin to a 12-step program. So the first step really is to recognize that reliance on protection alone is insufficient. Protections will always fail eventually. We have a situation where the IT and IT security folks have to patch all vulnerabilities, have to catch all intrusions perfectly 100% of the time in order to protect the organization. Whereas the attackers only have to exploit one vulnerability, and that vulnerability might not be technical. They might exploit a human being's vulnerability, both, well, on the one hand, perhaps somebody who can be convinced to click on a link or provide their credentials through a phishing or other social engineering attack, or on the other, to, you know, resort to bribery or other means to, you know, turn an employee into one of their actors. So an organization cannot guarantee that it will never be attacked. The playing field is just too fundamentally imbalanced. And so the first step, again, is recognition that reliance on protection alone is insufficient. But once that recognition is achieved, which is the first key step, it's important, in my experience, to create a sense of urgency, which really shouldn't be that hard. I mean, there's plenty of recent examples. We just talked about a couple, but there are many recent examples of devastating attacks against large and, for each organization, nearby healthcare institutions nearby to them that have been hit, and point to, you know, how devastating it's been. And then you can take data from the Ponemon Institute and others and show how prevalent these attacks are. So create a sense of urgency, which should lead to the assemblage of a guiding coalition with a recognition that the emergency management leadership at the organization is not going to be prepared to deal with this on their own. In my experience, these folks do a great job, but they focus on two fundamental kinds of problems. Problem one is no buildings from a fire, earthquake, hurricane, tornado, something like that, right? The problem two is no people, a strike, civil unrest, something like that, right? So they know very well how to handle those things, you know, how to evacuate buildings, how to bring in per diem and short-term workers, that sort of thing. What they don't have experience with, and what I've seen, is the people are there, the buildings are standing, the technology is gone. They just don't know how to even conceptualize that. Generally speaking, in healthcare organizations that use technology, pretty much all of them, the folks who deal with outages are IT, not the emergency preparedness folks. So what you need to do then is realize you need to bring together a guiding coalition that includes operations, emergency preparedness, IT, IT security, and also critical people who really understand how to bridge these things, like your CMIO and other clinical technology folks who understand how it all knits together. Then you have to do some discovery. Figure out what exactly is going to be lost in a worst case scenario? This is much more complicated and interesting than it might seem. So, for example, I've seen where, well, I'll ask you, Marianne, have you ever been in a building where in order to call an elevator, you had to walk up to a box outside the elevator bank and punch in the floor you're going to, and then it tells you which elevator to get on?
Yeah, recently, and it was very confusing.
Yes. Now, those elevators, they might look like elevators, but they're really computers. They're using IP protocol, and it's Windows-based. There's a server behind that. And if that's taken out yet, those elevators will not work. Does your hospital have elevators that might not work in the event of a ransomware attack? You need to know. Or something even more sort of pedestrian. A lot of hospitals still use vacuum tube systems to send things around the hospital, specimens or paperwork or the like, you know. There are really two kinds. There are those which are analog, like back in the 1950s or 60s, and those which are IP. The IP ones may not work. You have to know, right? What about your phones? Generally speaking, an organization will have, a hospital, you know, will typically have three different kinds of phone systems. They'll have digital, analog, and they'll have the red phones, which is copper straight out to the telecoms folks for emergencies. The general misconception I've seen is that the analog phones will work. But what I've seen is when you trace them back, you have to work with your IT folks on this, they resolve to an IP. They're computers too, even though they're not on your VoIP system. So they're probably not going to work either. And that means your fax machines won't work. You can use your fax machines as copiers, and that's all they'll be to you. So you have to do discovery. What are you going to have or what are you not going to have? And in a worst case scenario, why a worst case scenario? Because if you plan for a worst case scenario and you don't lose everything, then you can flip a few pages ahead in your playbook to when you got those things back, and then you can start from there, which is better, right? But if you don't find yourself so lucky and you're in fact in the worst case scenario, you need to have it all planned out. So you need to decide who will do what in the event of a major hit. I can tell you that from what I've seen, the chief information security officer, the CISO, will temporarily become the CEO of the organization. Why is that? Because that person is going to be telling everybody else what to do and what not to do. They'll be telling everybody, don't turn on your computers, don't log on. This system's okay, this one's not. You can do this, not that. And the CEO is going to be sitting there asking them what they can do, right? So that needs to be clearly understood how the chain of command is going to work, you know, not just wing it, right? And then lay out key decision trees, including how is the decision going to be made on whether or not to pay ransom, right? And how will that be teed up and who's going to make that decision? And then plenty of other decisions. This all just needs to be laid out in a sort of a parallel universe where everything's upside down. And of course, you have to attend to critical cross-departmental functions, probably the most important of which is communications. If your phones are out and all everybody has is cell phone, which may or may not have a signal, especially if you're in or near the radiology department with its lead-lined walls, you know, good luck getting a signal there. But if all of your regular phones are out and all your servers are out and all your homegrown apps, including your on-call app or your directory, those are out. And how is anybody going to reach anybody else? How is anybody going to know who's on call? How is anybody going to know what somebody else's phone number is? You need to figure this out. It could be something as simple as just start at every one of your sites every day. Somebody prints out the call list for that day, or maybe even that whole week, and has a printed out, not on a server somewhere, printed out on paper, directory list with everybody's name, role, and phone number. Why? Because if you need to, you can take those fax machines, which are now just copy machines, and you can start making copies of all that stuff. You can also start making copies of all the paper forms that everybody's going to need. But, you know, let's step back a minute. How long does it take organizations to recover from ransomware? Full recovery is still taking 3 to 6 months. sufficient recovery to take care of patients safely is taking 3 to 5 or 6 weeks, right? Why is it taking so long? There seem to be two fundamental contributors to that, Marianne. Probably one of the most important is lack of ability to communicate, confusion, basically fog of war, lack of prior coordination. No one knows what they're supposed to be doing. Everybody's spinning around, you know, working hard, but at cross purposes with one another. A lot isn't being done efficiently. So how do you solve that? In my experience, it's beforehand, get everybody together who needs to be brought together and develop a rank ordered playlist to be handed to IT and IT security. This is what we want you to do in this order. These, in other words, we care most about getting these functions restored and then these applications, then these devices, then these servers, whatever. Just figure it out. And it is going to be very contentious. Some people are going to be at the bottom of the list and they're not going to be happy. But fundamentally, you got to figure out what the order is and get that handed over and print it out on paper again, because they're not going to be available. You try to access it on a server, obviously. And here's something I've learned more recently from a colleague who asked that I not provide the name of anybody involved here, but the recent ransomware situation in a healthcare organization where my colleague was involved as an outside consultant, they made the decision to rebuild all their endpoints from the beginning. Basically, pretty much what has happened everywhere else is they make that decision to rebuild endpoints after a couple of weeks, right? And when I say endpoints, I mean the workstations, the laptops, all the devices that are endpoints, right? I'm not talking about the servers. And what I'm talking about here is that takes time. And basically, it takes an enormous amount of time to assess whether all these thousands or maybe tens of thousands, maybe even some large organizations, hundreds of thousands of endpoints are infected or not. It's better, based on what I learned here, to just consider them all infected and rebuild them all from the beginning. Just get assemble your IT folks, get a factory situation going, get all these things physically delivered, rebuilt, sent out. And before that, have a cache of enough clean machines that are not booted up. You can hand them around to provide some, you know, core critical functions. And then as you're rebuilding, you restore your numbers. But that in the situation I'm talking about, it was reported to me that this one decision cut the outage time in half from 4 weeks to 2 weeks. Pretty dramatic. Okay. And then I guess one of the last things I'd say is that the various departments and venues of care have playbooks now on what to do in various situations, including IT outages, but their IT outage playbooks assume outages that last for hours, not weeks or months, hours. And oftentimes what actually happens is during an IT, a temporary IT outage, everybody will just wait and do their work later. They'll just wait until the systems come back up a few hours later and then write all their notes and other documentation, et cetera, you know, but that's not possible in a ransomware situation. And so what you have to do is get all these folks together and get them to understand what you're talking about and what's really going to be available to them and for how long this is probably going to last, or in a worst case scenario, how long it would last, and get them to build out their playbooks. You know, education is going to be critical, repeated education with these leaders. My experience sitting around a table, I witnessed over and over again, people making fundamental errors in understanding, including probably most, the one that happened the most often was people assume that the fax machines would work. Oh, okay, well, that's not going to happen. How are we going to get results back from the lab? Oh, we'll use fax machines. We have to point out to them, the phones aren't going to work. Your fax machines are just going to be copiers. You're going to need runners, or, you know, hopefully your vacuum tube system is going to work. You better find out, right? And then lastly, schedule exercises. I would call this a drill, baby, drill, right? Not the oil kind, but this is the practice kind. And make them as realistic as possible, including having the cojones, Marianne, to conduct drills at actual sites. Maybe starting with a clinic on the weekend when it's not open anyway, but maybe even, you know, during a work day and see how people are prepared. It takes a lot of guts to do that, but any organization that does these things, including that one, is going to be vastly better prepared to continue to operate right after they've been hit and to restore their functions as quickly as possible.
So, Eric, with that all said, if you had one piece of advice to give to a healthcare CISO and their team on what they can do to better prepare the clinical folks, you know, to deal with everything you just said, what would that piece of advice be? You know, obviously, you know, there's always a disconnect between, like, you know, the tech people and the security people and the clinicians. But if there was one thing that you told a CISO and their team to do to help drill it into the heads of the people, you know, on the clinical floors, what they're going to need to deal with, what would you tell them to do besides practice?
The CISOs already know that reliance on protection alone is insufficient. So they don't need to figure that out. What they need to do is create that sense of urgency, without which nobody else is going to act. They need to bring real life examples that they can get from their colleagues across the CISO community and other healthcare organizations that have been hit, including examples that are just out there on the internet. I mean, there's plenty of stuff, unfortunately or fortunately, however you might look at it, on Reddit from employees of healthcare organizations posting about how chaotic and horrible things are at their ransomware hit healthcare organization, even weeks after the initial attack. And so by creating that sense of urgency with their healthcare organization leadership, especially around operations and informatics, they can do the rest of what I described. That is the most important thing, is to get everybody on the same page, understanding that something has to be done to prepare for disaster.
And Eric, finally, you recently retired from Kaiser Permanente after nearly two decades at the organization. Tell us a little bit about Cyber Solutions MD and why you decided to launch the firm.
Yeah, thanks, Marianne. You know, my passion, as I hope may be coming through in our discussion today and our previous discussions, Marianne, we've had several previous discussions as well. My passion is around making complex healthcare organizations work as efficiently and as effectively as possible to allow everybody to do their best job taking care of patients in any circumstances, including the most dire that we've been talking about right now, where ransomware attack removes all the technology. So I've been working in development of and implementation, maintenance, funding of, and oversight of digital health for decades. I mean, I really started this career back in 1996. I've worked at a large community hospital system, a large academic health system, and more recently, as you point out, at Kaiser Permanente, which is one of the largest integrated healthcare delivery organizations in the world. And I guess I've seen how within large complex organizations, it's possible to make everything just work almost all the time. You know, I've been able to, working with my IT colleagues, for example, reduce outage times with electronic health record from 15 hours when I started to an average of 15 minutes or less, and have them happen much less often. Those are just the planned outages, and reducing the unplanned outages by 95%+ in terms of frequency and duration, right? And then in terms of privacy and security, making everybody just feel safe, right? Because it's just a matter of life and death. And it's not just a matter of life and death just for the people who are coming in the door from outside to receive care there. But in most cases, the people working at a healthcare organization, they and their families and the people they love are also getting their care there, and they all want to feel safe. They want to feel like their critically important healthcare information is safeguarded, and that they're going to be able to get the care they need the way they want it and the way they need it when they want it and when they need it. That's why I started this firm, so I can provide some sort of consultancy assistance and advice to those who might want it.
Well, thank you so much, Eric. I've been speaking with Dr. Eric Lederman. I'm Marianne Kolbasek of Information Security Media Group. Thanks for joining us.